It's the Brian Lara Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Most of you probably heard the headline story yesterday about AI, artificial intelligence. And I'm guessing that many of you were misled by the way some of the headlines framed it. For example, this from the New York Times: Elon Musk and others call for pause on AI, citing profound risks to society. That's one example. There was also this headline in The Guardian: Elon Musk joins call for pause in creation of giant AI digital mines. Or this from NBC News: Elon Musk and several other technologists call for a pause on training of AI systems. And I could go on with similar headlines from Reuters and the Financial Times and other places, but here's why I think all those headlines may have misled you and tricked your human brain, your natural rather than artificial intelligence, into having the wrong first reaction to the story. All those headlines make it sound like the story is about Elon Musk. And given what you probably think of Elon Musk these days, maybe you rolled your eyes. The first few people I mentioned the story to, when it was just breaking yesterday, were like, oh yeah, there go the big tech companies trying to get everyone else to stop developing new stuff so they can dominate the market. But I think that's probably the wrong way to look at it. In broader context, more than 1,100 people signed an open letter from a think tank called the Future of Life Institute, which studies existential risks to humanity. How's that for a job? The letter calls for the six-month pause. Almost all of the signatories being less well-known than Elon Musk, obviously, including many who have very different politics and less general weirdness than he does. They want the pause to assess the impact of and develop policies to stay in control of machines that can outthink us, take our jobs, and potentially change civilization for the worst. Now, in a minute, I'm going to read some excerpts from the open letter, more than just two sentences or so that are making the media sound bites for the most part. But let me bring in our guest for this first. It's Sigal Samuel, senior reporter for Vox's Future Perfect and co-host of the Future Perfect podcast. Her bio page says she writes primarily about the future of consciousness, tracking advances in artificial intelligence and neuroscience and their staggering ethical implications. So I don't think she's Elon Musk. In fact, her headline on this story yesterday was more cheeky than those other ones. It said, AI leaders, then in parentheses, and Elon Musk, urge AI labs to press pause on powerful AI. Sigal, thanks for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks so much for having me.
You know, there's a famous spoof edition of the New York Post from the 1980s. It's satire. It's a joke, just so everyone's clear on this, like the Onion before the Onion, fake New York Post. And the screaming headline on the cover of this fake New York Post is "Nuclear War, Michael Jackson, 80 million others dead." And that's what I thought of when I saw how all these headlines frame this around Elon Musk. So tell us, why did you put his name in sarcastic parentheses?
I mean, for a few reasons, but I mean, basically, like, this isn't really about Elon Musk, but people, for better or worse, tend to pay attention and read whatever is going on when it includes Elon Musk, because he's just such a lightning rod. But really, this is not about him. This is the AI leaders, and that's why they're the main feature of the headline. Because the point is that pioneers, like recognized very important researchers in the field of AI, are now warning and urging all labs to press pause on developing really powerful AI. And the point is that these are people who really know what they're talking about. Elon Musk, maybe not so much.
Like I said in the intro, I thought I would read some excerpts from this open letter to the listeners. The lines I chose will take about 2 minutes to read. I think they're representative. But could you help set this up for our listeners by telling us, to the extent that you know, who this Future of Life Institute is that actually released this open letter, as well as the scope of the 1,100 signatories?
Sure. So the Future of Life Institute is a nonprofit. It works to reduce catastrophic, potentially existential risks. So like major risks facing humanity, whether that's, nuclear weapons or anything like that. But I want to emphasize it's not just them. They paired with folks from the Center for Humane Technology, like Tristan Harris and Asa Raskin, who listeners might remember from the Netflix show the Social Dilemma that came out about social media. And broadly, the people signing this are people in tech, people in AI, whether they're veteran pioneers in the AI field who've been working on this for decades, or whether they're just, software engineers, coders, people who know the field, work in the field, and are concerned.
So we hear Elon Musk, Steve Wozniak from Apple, and Andrew Yang, but it's also all those other people. So, all right, here go the excerpts. I clocked this at about 2 minutes. We'll see how close I came. And here we go. It says, "Advanced AI could represent a profound change in the history of life on Earth and should be planned for and managed with commensurate care and resources. Unfortunately, this level of planning and management is not happening." Says, "We must ask ourselves, should we let machines flood our information channels with propaganda and untruth? Should we automate away all the jobs, including the fulfilling ones? Should we develop non-human minds that might eventually outnumber, outsmart, obsolete, and replace us?" We'll forgive them for using obsolete as a verb. Outsmart, obsolete, and replace us. "Should we risk loss of control of our civilization? Such decisions must not be delegated to unelected tech leaders." I'm surprised Elon Musk signed on to that, but good. "Powerful AI systems should be developed only once we are confident that their effects will be positive and their risks will be manageable. This confidence must be well justified and increase with the magnitude of a system's potential effects. Therefore, we call on all AI labs to immediately pause for at least 6 months the training of AI systems more powerful than GPT-4, and we'll explain what GPT-4 means. This pause should be public and verifiable and include all key actors. If such a pause cannot be enacted quickly, government should step in and institute a moratorium." Continues, "AI labs and independent experts should use this pause to jointly develop and implement a set of shared safety protocols for advanced AI design and development that are rigorously audited and overseen by independent outside experts. These protocols should ensure that systems adhering to them are safe beyond a reasonable doubt. AI research and development should be refocused on making today's powerful state-of-the-art systems more accurate, safe, interpretable, transparent, robust, aligned, trustworthy, and loyal." Remember that word loyal. We're going to come back to that. In parallel, it says, "AI developers must work with policymakers to dramatically accelerate development of robust AI governance systems. These should, at a minimum, include new and capable regulatory authorities dedicated to AI, liability for AI-caused harm, well-resourced institutions for coping with the dramatic economic and political disruptions, especially to democracy, that AI will cause." And it concludes, "Society has hit pause on other technologies with potentially catastrophic effects on society. We can do so here. Let's enjoy a long AI summer." Summer means pause in this respect. "Not rush unprepared into a fall." All right, it took me 3 minutes. Sue me. Excerpts from the open letter calling for at least a six-month pause in developing major artificial intelligence projects. They are our guest. If you joined in the middle is Sigal Samuel from Vox, who covers consciousness and artificial intelligence. And listeners, what do you think? First of all, any signatories to the letter happen to be listening? That certainly could be the case. Call in and make your case. 212-433-WNYC. Or anyone else who works with AI in any capacity, 212-433-9692. Tell us a story from your field. React to the letter, or anyone else with a thought or a question, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Sigal, let me get your take on some of that language. The six-month pause would be on training systems that are more powerful than GPT-4. So what's the line they're drawing there? What's GPT-4 and what does it represent in the letter?
GPT-4 represents the state of the art that we have right now. It's a large language model released by OpenAI, which, you know, basically is a system that it's basically predicting in a sequence of words that you give it, what is the most plausible next word that would follow. And, you know, as I'm sure a lot of listeners have been finding out by playing around with ChatGPT, this can do some surprisingly impressive things. You know, whether it's writing you a song or summarizing text and much more. GPT-4 is currently the most advanced thing we know of in the field. And this is an argument saying, let's pause there for now.
One chilling line to me was when the letter said future AI research should be refocused on making new systems more accurate, safe, interpretable, transparent, robust, aligned, trustworthy, and loyal. And as I kind of indicated when I was reading the letter, it was that last word, loyal, that stopped me in my tracks for a minute. Loyalty is a human trait, not one we think about computers being able to have or not have. What do you think they mean by loyal in that context?
Yeah, I'm glad you're bringing this up. Personally, I would not have used the word loyal there, but if it stopped you in your tracks, maybe that's a useful thing. Loyal sort of, as you said, it implies a human quality. And these are not, you know, human sentient beings. They're, you know, machinery. But I think what they're getting at there, they're probably sort of alluding to something called the alignment problem, which is basically that, you know, even if you design an AI system, it has no ill intentions toward you per se. It doesn't want to destroy you per se, but it can still mess things up for you pretty badly if it ends up acting in a way that is not what the developer had in mind. I'll give an example that, you know, it sounds far-fetched, but this is, in a nutshell, the alignment problem. Let's say you develop a super capable AI system. You program it, you know, to solve some impossibly difficult problem, like calculating the number of atoms in the universe. Okay, sounds fine. But it might realize that it can do a better job of that if it gains access to all the computer power on Earth. So it releases a weapon of mass destruction to wipe us all out, let's say like a perfectly engineered virus or something. And now it's free to use all the computer power. So in this scenario, we would get exactly what we had asked for, which is the number of atoms in the universe, very rigorously, beautifully calculated. But that's obviously not what we wanted, right, for us to all be wiped out in the process. That's a far-fetched kind of example of the alignment problem. But experts have already seen and documented many smaller scale examples of AI systems that end up doing something other than what their designer wants.
Yeah.
For example, you know, they might get the high score in a video game, but not by playing fairly or like learning game skills, just by hacking the scoring system. So I think that's kind of what they're getting at when they say loyalty, although that's not the word I would have used because it implies some sort of human quality.
Well, you know, even your description on Vox of what you report on gave me those kinds of chills, that you write primarily about the future of consciousness tracking artificial intelligence developments. Consciousness is something I think of as a human trait, too. So what do you mean by consciousness in the context of your job covering AI?
I'm very interested in consciousness, future consciousness, whether from in the context of AI or neuroscience or animal cognition, right? Because humans aren't the only beings that are conscious. I think right now, like, we should be very clear that, you know, these AI systems are not conscious. They're not sentient. That's not the world we're in. But I'm interested in the hypothetical theoretical discussion that people have around, could one ever design a system, based in silicon or whatever, that eventually develops something like consciousness. So that's not where we are now, but I'm interested in that discussion.
All right. You're not going to be surprised, Sigal, that all our lines are full. So let's hear some people's experiences or what they're thinking about whether there should be a pause on major artificial intelligence development, as these 1,100 signatories to an open letter are calling for. And Jeanette in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in, Jeanette. Hi there.
Hi. How do you pause the world in controlling the world developing AI programs which might harm us all? Why don't we continue to develop AI to stop an AI system in the future that might be catastrophic?
Sigal, what do you think the signatories to the letter might say to that question?
I think it's sort of like a curious impulse that some of us have to sort of suppose that the solution to a potential AI-caused problem is more AI, like smarter AI. And Jeanette, you're definitely not alone in thinking about this. In fact, OpenAI, their stated intention on the record is to develop more powerful AI that they hope will do our homework for us in terms of doing the AI alignment homework, which is to say, you know, that they hope that the AIs will eventually help make the AIs safer and more aligned with what our human goals. I think that's, I don't see why we should be confident that that would be the case. I think it makes much more sense to think about how we humans can make decisions that will safeguard human safety.
Yeah, although they almost call for what Jeanette is saying, right? In that same line that I was focusing on before from the letter says AI research and development should be refocused on making today's powerful state-of-the-art systems more accurate, safe, interpretable, mm-hmm. transparent, robust, aligned, trustworthy, and loyal. So it almost seems like they are saying, let's continue to develop AI in a way that it develops in our interest.
Absolutely. And I definitely think we should make it more interpretable, more transparent. Those are all great goals. It's just that that's not necessarily work for the AI to do on itself. I think that's work that we as humans need to insist. You know, we really want that and need that to be done.
Yeah. You know, another reason that I think some people have reacted cynically to this letter is not just the highlighting and the press coverage of Elon Musk and Andrew Yang's involvement, but also something you write about, that these are the people who got us into this mess, and they're asking the people in the industry they created to stop work voluntarily. Is there any reason to think the companies and people that will profit the most will voluntarily stop their race to build the next big AI thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like there's a very, very understandable impulse to eye roll here when you see some of the signatories include some of the exact people who have been pushing out these AI models that the letter is warning about and have been kind of catalyzing this AI race. So I think it's very fair to sort of eye roll at that. But my instinct is this is too important to see that eye roll and then stop at the eye rolling. I would rather, you know, we have our moment eye rolling and then say, okay, but you know what? Anyone who wants to be in this big tent that is about like pressuring the industry to stop this mess from spiraling out of control, great. Like, it's important enough that I think we can all kind of band together and say, like, how do we reshape incentives in the industry so that the incentives are pushing more toward safety, interpretability, transparency, accountability, and not just pushing towards profit and racing?
Alan in Westport is calling with an example that's in a field that we probably wouldn't think of first or even early with respect to AI or chatbots. But Alan went somewhere last night he wants to report on, apparently. Alan, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in.
Yes, Brian, good to be with you and your guest. The timing is propitious. I spent 2 hours last night on a seminar run by the Non-Adversarial Divorce Council here in Connecticut. And the woman presenting, we saw robots who spoke to us, We learned how clients seeking a divorce can contact us on our iPhones, our computers, to schedule appointments, get our intake forms, schedule meetings, and basically technologically monitor a divorce mediation practice. And I left feeling profoundly dispirited. As for me personally, 65 years old, I've done over 1,000 divorces, probably 350 divorce mediations. Coming out of COVID, I don't want less human contact. I don't want more technology in my professional or personal life. I want less of it. And if this is the direction that my world, my professional world is moving, I'm glad I'm as old as I am and not a young person just entering it now.
That's interesting. Alan, you said you've done over 1,000 divorce mediations. When you do divorce mediation...
1,000 divorces and about 350 mediations, Brian.
Uh-huh. So the mediations are to couples with couples who may or may not wind up getting divorced?
They always end up getting divorced. It's the rare one that doesn't. By the time folks walk through my door, one or both parties are seeking a divorce. So my job is to help them get to the other side of this, you know, needless to say, profoundly significant life transition.
Thank you very much. Any reaction to that story? Just like less human contact and more machine contact in a field that's all about human relations?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very natural and relatable impulse. And I think for me, actually, what that the bit of the open letter that your comment reminds me of is the bit that's just sort of encouraging us to ask questions of ourselves, like, should we let machines flood our ecosystems in this way? Should we develop these sorts of AI systems that will potentially replace us in some of our jobs or, you know, some of the contexts that you might work in, for example? I think what that's getting at is, In the tech world, there is very much this sort of myth of technological inevitability. There's this sort of myth that is propagated that, you know, once we're starting to develop these technologies, they just simply must, it's like an inexorable march of progress, and it simply must proceed, and, you know, whether we want it or not. And I think, like, that's very fundamentally bizarre because that's a myth. We're humans. We can decide what machines we want to have created or not. And it's very striking to me that companies like OpenAI declare, you know, as part of their mission statement, that their goal is to benefit all of humanity. But, you know, people like you are pointing out, hey, does this benefit me? And, you know, even maybe more to the point, the ultimate goal of people like OpenAI, which is to build artificial general intelligence, so potentially surpassing humans in a wide range of domains, do we want that? Does all of humanity want AGI? Have people like you been asked for their input? It's sort of notable to me that folks claim to be developing these technologies to benefit all of us, but it doesn't necessarily seem like, you know, folks like you have really been consulted on what would make your life richer.
Yeah, but you touch on another reaction that I was getting from people when I was talking to them about this off the air yesterday, which is that it is really inevitable that any technology that can be developed will be developed if someone finds it in their interest. And I wonder if there is any example of resisting that temptation. I mean, the letter says society has hit pause on other technologies with potentially catastrophic effects on society. Mm-hmm. Do you know what they are referring to, or are there any examples you could think of?
Absolutely. So any listeners interested in this and who tend to be inclined to think the technological inevitability is true, I would humbly encourage you to read my piece on Vox called The Case for Slowing Down AI, which really takes apart some of these myths. And, you know, I sort of list a bunch of examples where, in fact, we see that technological inevitability is a myth. There's plenty of technologies that we've, you know, stopped or put very significant restrictions on. And that includes technologies that could be very economically valuable. You know, big ones that come to mind are especially in the field of genetic modification. So there was the Asilomar conference in the 70s, which where early recombinant DNA researchers famously got together and organized a moratorium, kind of like these AI folks want to organize a moratorium now. Mm-hmm. And then they developed ongoing research guidelines about what kind of experiments are going to be prohibited, what is it okay to do. But if you're looking for examples of tech that we've decided to not really deploy, think about human cloning. Think about genetic manipulation of humans. Hmm. You know, these are potentially economically valuable technologies, but, you know, with the exception of one rogue Chinese scientist who did do that, but then was immediately imprisoned, we haven't pursued these technologies because we recognize that there are very real risks. So humanity certainly has the ability to press pause on or to, forbid certain kinds of work.
With Sigal Samuel, who covers this sort of thing for Vox, and Arturo in Nyack, you're on WNYC. Hi, Arturo.
I think some of this is exaggerated because I gave myself a challenge to try to defeat ChatGPT. By defeat, I mean get it to make a wrong statement. And the first try, and I did it by asking it to explain something, why this cannot happen. If you want, this is a short statement, I can give it to you, but it's on a scientific issue.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And it did come up with a wrong statement. So I strongly suspect that current AI cannot make inferences.
Interesting. Arturo, thank you very much. Calling from Colts Neck, I don't know, we might have to use artificial intelligence programs to screen phone calls from now on to get the towns right. No, actually, I think that was a computer error in our in our system, funny enough. But what about that? If a guy can decide to try to trick ChatGPT into giving an inaccurate answer on something, and he was able to do it, what does that imply about whether we're exaggerating the power of these things?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it definitely is the case that sometimes there is exaggerated capabilities. People might have the misconception that AI always tells you some objective truth. And that's definitely not the case. And it's definitely not the case with large language models like ChatGPT or GPT-4. And the makers of these systems will tell you that clearly. You don't even need to try to get the AI to give you a wrong answer. It will often just give you a wrong, completely made up answer. So for example, if you ask ChatGPT for, write me a paragraph summarizing the scientific literature on X topic, it will write you a lovely paragraph and it will cite some academic papers. But then if you go and actually try to track down those academic papers and look at them, you might find that they're entirely fictitious. The papers don't actually exist in the real world. ChatGPT has just made them up because it sounds, you know, it's picking plausible words, words that plausibly, statistically, probabilistically could follow next in the sentence that has come before, the words mm-hmm. that have come before.
Right. And as another article on Vox said back last fall, AI text generators can now write essays as well as your typical undergraduate, making it easy to cheat in a way no plagiarism detector can catch. AI-generated artwork is even winning state fairs. What? Do you know about that one? I think people have been talking about the college essay thing for a long time already now. But how about AI-generated artwork winning state fairs? Have you heard of that?
Yeah, I mean, AI is definitely shaking up the art world, and different people feel differently about that. You will find some artists who are happy to consider AI a collaborator and kind of use AI in their process of creating art. And you'll definitely find a lot of artists who are really pissed about these sort of models like Stable Diffusion or DALL-E 2, models being trained on artwork that they've made that are like sort of digitally available online. And so now the model is able to do something where, you know, if you say, hey, make me a painting of a girl in the style of so-and-so contemporary artist, mm-hmm. it might do a really wonderful job. But that's because it's the AI has been trained on the art made by this actual human artist without that human artist's, you know, consent, permission, or without that artist being paid for their work.
And the open letter, as I read earlier, calls for well-resourced institutions for coping with the dramatic economic and political disruptions, especially to democracy, that AI will cause. Do you know what they have in mind with respect to disruptions to democracy?
Well, my guess would be that they have in mind that basically the concern is that this new AI era is going to repeat many of the mistakes of the social media era, but on steroids. So we all have seen how, you know, social media fragmented our political discourse. We're all probably familiar with talk of creating political echo chambers, what that has done to polarize society, in some cases, arguably push societies to more authoritarian governments, and generally kind of lead to arguably a breakdown in democracy in the sense that people can't even agree now on who won certain elections, right? There's such political polarization and a breakdown in the kind of national conversation. So that was just with the very primitive systems we had, you know, let's say a decade ago in terms of Facebook and other social media platforms. Now, if we start to quickly integrate large language models, things like GPT into our systems, and this is happening, this integration is happening, for example, with Google products. The concern is, what will this do to our democracy now that we have these much more powerful systems? What I really worry about is, you know, now you might have heard actually people like Elon Musk complaining that the current systems like GPT are too quote unquote woke, and they want to have AIs that will, you know, not have certain filters on them. The concern I would have there is if we end up with a scenario where many, many different groups are each building developing and tweaking their own AI models. And so you basically get these echo chambers, but that are now sort of turbocharged by these sort of like bespoke models. Will that increase the worry about echo chambers and polarization, but by orders of magnitude? That's a real concern I have. Hmm.
One more call. MC in Red Bank, you're on WNYC. Hi, MC. Are you really in Red Bank?
I really am in Red Bank.
Oh, good. That's progress.
Yeah. Well, thanks for this conversation. An amazing guest who's clearly an expert on the topic. Just holistically zooming out from large language models is the threat of AI overall. The spoofing and deepfake threat is not only obviously clearly evident in the enterprise space, but, you know, it's slowly leaking into the private sector and can become a nation state threat for us. So I think it's really important that transparency and data is able to have a layer of verification as we move forward through AI.
And how can we best do that? You want to keep going on that, MC?
Sure. Well, I'm you know, being clearly transparent here, I'm the founder of Forcefield. We have patent pending technology to verify streaming media. To give you an idea of what DocuSign does for documents, the same thing is going to be needed for data, streaming video, and photos as AI becomes smarter and as deepfakes become more believable, much like the verification system that Twitter had that has soon fallen. We will need checks and balances for regulation and compliance, and I think that's the only way through this.
Thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. So to finish up, Sigal, you wrote that you're for the 6-month pause, but what should be done with the time is less clear. And you also note that when the letter calls for new governance structures to regulate AI, the Congress lacks expertise in artificial intelligence. I'll add that we saw how cringeworthy some of the questioning was. Excuse me. We saw how cringeworthy some of the questioning was at last week's hearing just about TikTok. So do you have any thoughts on what a constructive government role could be?
Yes. Yes. So I'm for a 6-month moratorium. Do I think that's enough? No. I think we desperately need more regulation in this space. We desperately need laws to hold powerful people in the tech world and Silicon Valley accountable, because right now it's a wild west and there's very little accountability. Problem is, you know, as you were mentioning, lawmakers, you know, this is very advanced technology. I think lawmakers genuinely want to know more about this, but are behind in how fast. We're all behind. It's so hard to keep up, even if you're an expert. There's just the research is moving so fast. I think we can use that 6 months in part to just have increased education, literacy, both among lawmakers and among the public, about what is happening with these models, the state-of-the-art models, and really think about robust policy, regulations, laws that we can put in place to protect society, not just from what the AI models could do, particularly if we let them get even more powerful, GPT-5 on the way, but really protect us from, you know, tech groups that are going to increasingly just basically increase power in the hands of the powerful at the expense of humanity, which they claim to be benefiting all of us. But if we don't institute very careful regulations and insist on more transparency and interpretability and accountability, we really are on track to end up with a world where we're really just concentrating power and riches in the hands of people who are already the powerful and the rich.
Sigal Samuel, senior reporter for Vox's Future Perfect and co-host of their Future Perfect podcast. Thank you so much for sharing some of your wisdom with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.